Welcome everybody to episode 89 of High Tech on the Low. Adam, how are you this morning?
Yo, how's it going?
Very good, very good. I'm really glad to have you. We're sitting here with Adam Raqib, president and founder of Mavens, formerly Store Maven, acquired by Zynga. And as always, we are sponsored by Front Teams with 12 different communities, 6 verticals, and 3,000 members all looking to connect. And today we get to have a really special talk about the world of connecting entrepreneurs and apps and all that, you know, fun stuff that's going on in the Mavens, by the way, excuse me, not Store Maven, Mavens ecosystem. So Adam, why don't you give a brief introduction to yourself for the people at home just so they understand what you guys are doing at Mavens and how you got there in the first place?
Sure. So when our company began, our main focus was on solving one of the biggest problems that app developers have, which is converting people from seeing their presence in the app store to actually downloading. Companies, especially large ones, spend millions of dollars driving traffic, or, you know, Facebook ads as an example, to a single page that is a black box, like really difficult to understand what's going on. How do people make decisions there? Mm. Do people spend, you know, an hour reading through reviews, or right, people making snap decisions? How does that, you know, impact the way they need to design, the way they present themselves, the messaging? And then, of course, the ability to actually A/B test and, you know, scientifically get to a point where you know what you're doing and converting better. Uh-huh. So we solved that problem. It happens to be called app store testing under the field of app store optimization.
Sure.
At the end of the day, it's helping app developers grow their business. And that was the first application of what we were doing and what we were trying to solve. What happened, you know, later on in the business is we basically learned that there's another void that was really, really big. And that's the fact that, you know, like companies in the mobile space that were known to be the most data-driven companies in the world were not as data-driven as we thought they should be. Uh-huh. And a lot of that was because they were limited by very, very generic business intelligence products that were good for, you know, say a company that has warehouses for,
sure,
I don't know, vehicles, and for a company like Uber.
Okay.
And it doesn't really make sense to be that generic. I mean, it's a great business, obviously, but right, like we always felt like there's way more to unlock if you have a turnkey solution for something that's far more specific. And doing that, you know, in a way that embeds like certain expertise over a field. So imagine like you're an app developer, you connect to this system,
right,
and you already have, with like the click of a button, built in an idea of how to run your business.
Interesting. Okay. And where did this start?
Mavens is actually my second exit. Wow. So
congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. Back in 2009, myself, along with a pretty extensive group of founders, we were 9 founders, started a company called Shaker.
Okay.
Which was like a second iteration of the metaverse, depending, sure, on where you want to date back to.
Okay, okay. You won't tell Zuck.
Well, Zuck knows.
Right, okay. Oh, he knows. Oh, okay, yeah. Okay,
we'll get the hottest,
there in a second.
We were the hottest thing for like a minute.
Okay.
We won TechCrunch Disrupt in 2011, I think. So nice. It was a pretty big deal coming out of Israel.
That's a big deal.
Raised a lot of money. Justin Gaga, Lady Gaga. See, that's how much I was close to them.
Right, okay.
Lady Gaga, Justin Bieber were investors in that company, which, nice, is kind of crazy. Super VC backed. That company was really interesting. It was a crazy ass ride. Is that okay to?
Yeah, of course it's okay. We're here. We're taking crazy ass rides all the time in startup world. What do you think this is?
We, you know, basically it didn't work.
Okay.
We didn't find product market fit for the application that we had sought out for in the beginning, which was kind of like, all right, let's try and recreate social settings virtually.
Okay.
And create some of the magic that there was in, you know, knowing, you know, in like the physical space.
Okay.
So that was where we were taking it, mostly like social, you know, elements to it, you know, like hanging out with friends, dating, networking,
okay,
those types of interactions.
So trying to get in all the social media craze of the day,
right,
too.
Exactly.
A little bit,
because we felt like, you know what, social media is kind of flat. Like the real time experience isn't really there. Everything is, offline in a way.
Okay.
But then, it's not really what people were seeking
at the end of the day. That's like, kind of almost like anti-logical, I would say, right? Because you're like looking for that connection, but then they're, at the end of the day, your product clearly, I mean, from what you're saying, didn't fit the market.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, there were plenty of reasons. One of them was like the fact that we were building everything for desktop, and then all of a sudden mobile happened, and right. Like people want to be on their phones.
It's
and then
thing.
That interaction, especially on the phone, it was like, it wasn't you being on your laptop spending maybe an hour consecutively just, you know, doing stuff.
Right.
All of a sudden people are on their phones and everything is rapid and people want really short, you know, forms of interaction. So
the attention economy.
Yes.
There you go.
Certainly.
So then how did you guys get into Mavens?
Well, what happened was we basically, you know, after we, you know, couldn't find product market fit with that type of experience, we said, all right, we've got like this crazy technology that creates this really fun vibe on the internet in a 3D kind of setting.
Sure.
And we said, all right, what verticals are inclined to actually want to spend money on such an experience?
Interesting.
And
so you kind of worked backwards a little bit.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, we have amazing stuff, but it didn't work with any of the guys we went for. So who do we go for?
Something like that. Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you kind of understand your edge from a technological point of view. And then we said, all right, we're having difficulties monetizing this, but not because we don't think we created a really fun experience, but people just don't want to pay for that experience. There were also problems with retention and stuff, but like, I think the fundamentals is we couldn't really articulate what a what our business model could be.
Right.
And with a lot of pressure from investors, we figured, you know, we're better off really taking a hard pivot. But okay, we've invested so much in this really crazy tech,
right,
and it looks amazing,
right,
feels good,
right.
Gaming was just the perfect, you know, position for us to take advantage of.
To kind of move in there.
Yeah, yeah. And then this was a time where, like, mobile games were butt ugly. Like, right. Really, they didn't do... weren't really good on the graphics.
Right.
And like everything was...
Fruit Ninja and Candy
Crush.
Yeah,
everything was,
like
super two-dimensional. Right. And it felt like, okay... You know, this could be disrupted even just from a, you know, visual graphic point of view.
Sure.
And we had that talent.
Okay.
It was funny because we didn't really know anything about gaming.
Okay.
So
you guys basically made a hard move.
Oh, yeah. And
right
we
now.
Took a big bet on ourselves that we would be able to just go in, understand this new vertical, and be the best at it. And what turned out to be, well, we had the benefit of having 9 founders. One of the guys... Crazy genius. He's the guy that just invented most of the games.
Okay.
His name is Yonatan Mo.
Okay.
Up until recently, he was the GM of Play Studios. So, long story. We got acquired by Play Studios. He continued to make crazy, brilliant games.
Okay.
So he took that on himself. And then myself and actually the founders that I'm working with today, mostly where we were focused on is trying to understand like the data infrastructure and how companies... in the gaming space actually make decisions.
Sure, okay.
And, you know, this was a time where being data-driven was still mostly a buzzword. No one really knew what that meant.
Right.
Gaming started to get it.
Okay.
So, you know, basically, I mean, it's quite simple. At the end of the day, it's just how do you measure what's happening in your environment and how do you take advantage of it?
Okay.
You know, so like
understanding
user behavior,
right,
and understanding how you can... ultimately build something that makes people happy based off of that data.
And clearly helping the whole look and feel anyways, because you guys went in the 3D route and you guys have all these cool little settings that are helping them kind of understand the new ecosystem, the new gaming environment, right?
Yeah.
So like so basically you guys pivot yourself into the gaming space.
Yep.
You guys build all these cool games, you make all this cool noise in the space. What happens next?
So at the same time, we were responsible for basically growing the app, right?
Okay.
So like, okay, you make an amazing game, that's really not enough.
Right.
You really have to make sure that you're, you know, it's like you're an author of a book. You know, it's great that you've written a great story, but...
You got to get it out there.
You got to get it out
right.
there, right?
Okay.
Exactly. So responsible for go-to-market. And in gaming, go-to-market a lot of times means advertising, digital marketing.
Right.
How do you know how you're spending, how you're recouping your dollars? Quite simple equation. There's cost of acquisition versus lifetime value.
Right.
But that's actually not that simple.
Okay.
So like cost is really dependent on where you're advertising and understanding the interaction of advertising in one place and another. Say, for example, like you spend $1 million on Google and $1 million on Facebook. What is actually incremental? People are seeing ads on both platforms. Right. Like there's a lot of science that goes into it and trying to understand right. how to be efficient.
100%.
And efficiency is super critical because at the end of the day, you're, you know, in a game, you basically have this economy of where you've got millions of players, but very few actually spend.
Right.
So this is like free to play, right?
100%.
So only 2-3% of people actually play.
And you got to capitalize on this.
You got to capitalize right. on it. And you also give 30% to the platforms. Mm-hmm. So you have to be mindful of how you're being efficient, how you're spending your money, right? And how you're also predicting lifetime value
sure.
based off of early events. Because you might not recoup your dollars immediately.
This is a ton of science. I never thought of games.
Yeah, this is too much information.
No, you know, it's crazy. Actually, you know, when I'm thinking about it, you know, because I work in digital marketing too, but yep. like, you know, I'm not a gamer guy. Okay, mm-hmm. I don't focus on the games either. Yep. It's not my area of expertise. And I've never really thought about this in the way you're bringing it up, kind of like that there's so few people who actually pay, but you need to capitalize on them. You have other partners, quote unquote, whether publishers, advertisers, who you need to take into consideration, plus your own team of people who are making the game better and, you know, you're building a company. It's yeah. crazy. I never really thought of it like that. So
yeah, games are not a game at all.
Yeah, that's a good one. Ooh, that could be a good slogan. Okay, so next gaming company I start, games yeah. are not a game at all. You know?
No, but what we say at the end of the day is like, to turn a great game into a great business, you really have to be experts in publishing.
Right.
Now, what happened at the time, so we did become experts in publishing because it's what we had to do,
right?
Right, to put a game out there. But, well, what happened was the company got acquired.
Right.
We decided that it was, you know, time for us to sell. We sold to a company called Play Studios, okay. which was great. It's a great acquisition. And me, Gadmore, and Eldad Abel, three founders of Stormhaven, we said...
Out of the nine, right?
Out of the nine, right. Exactly. We left them in great hands, believe me. We said, all right, we're not really ready for that ride yet.
Okay.
Like, we felt, for us, being, you know, part of a corporate company was just not our thing at the moment.
Okay.
And at the same time, we were always eager to kind of become... you know, this is going to sound weird, but like really become businessmen.
Okay. So you wanted to be businessmen, but not in the corporate structure.
Yeah. And, okay. and we didn't feel like we were accomplishing that, you know, especially not as we were getting acquired.
Really? Why is that? Because like to me, you know, a lot of people would say like acquiring, boom. Like, I just made it, right? You know, I made my product to the point where someone else in the industry, mm-hmm. a big player, wants me. You know, yeah. why did you decide that? I mean, it seems almost counterintuitive.
You know, I don't know. It's. I think that we had like a certain dynamics between us. We felt like we wanted some independence, and we felt like we wanted to see how we can create a company that does things differently. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense, but okay. like there was just something. We felt like now, you know, being absorbed into a different organization that actually calls the shots, it's just too soon.
Okay.
Yeah, we still felt like we needed our independence, that we wanted to do things our own way.
You like the grassroots.
Yeah, we like the grassroots, and Stormhaven was, like, honestly the most grassroots you could imagine.
Okay.
So, going back, I said, you know, we started becoming experts in publishing. We started building technology that was empowering our own app business to turn into a successful right. business. Right. And we figured, all right, like, what's missing? Like, why are other companies not capable of enjoying, you know, such technologies from a third party
sure.
vendor, right?
Right.
Like, imagine, you know, just to think of this as like this global trend, right? You used to have to, I don't know what, have a room in your office that cools servers.
Right.
We had one back in those days.
Okay.
And now everything's on the cloud.
Right.
Because expertise is being democratized. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And okay. We felt the same about publishing. Why does a game company have to become an expert in publishing?
Let everyone be an expert.
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you kind of make it accessible, that expertise? obviously through technology.
But that's a real good read also of the market at the time. Because in a sense, you were like looking at it, I would almost say from what you're telling me, a little before this whole decentralization craze, yeah. especially that happened in, you know, COVID and with the work from home and all this stuff, especially with the growth of cryptocurrencies and things yeah. like that too, which is getting the whole democratization world on fire. I mean, how did you see that trend?
Well, I think that there were definitely pioneers before us. If you think of like Airbnb and Uber, this was okay. about the time where sure. they were talking that talk.
Right.
But I don't think we recognized it at that point.
Like as at a
that
trend? Point,
yeah. Okay. If I'm honest, I don't think we had a vision, really. You know, at that point in time.
Okay.
In fact, we were just way more opportunistic. We said we have this idea. We're pretty sure it has product market fit.
Sure.
We're curious about seeing where we could take this, but we're definitely selling this thing in a year.
Right. Okay.
Didn't happen.
Okay.
But
a few years later,
ironically. Okay. We could have.
Okay.
Yeah, we did get a term sheet a year into the business.
Wow.
We decided to bootstrap. So like basically we weren't taking salaries. We hired people that, you know, took a big bet on us.
Okay.
They said, all right, we have a chance to join this thing. We're, you know, going to take.
We're on for the ride.
Barely, you know, a couple crumbs of bread sure. and we're on for the ride.
Okay.
It paid off for them.
Yeah, clearly.
It paid off for me too.
I was going to say, Mr. President. Come on.
So we didn't raise money.
Okay.
At all. And
zero. So no, you guys zero. Are all revenue based.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How was that decision? I mean, considering also that you had, you know, you're not like a inexperienced person here. You've worked in many situations where you said you had Justin Bieber, Lady Gaga, other major investors. This is not like a, you know, a first go for you in that sense.
Yeah, it's a good question.
And look, you have access to capital clearly at that point.
In the beginning, I think it was more about not necessarily knowing what we were raising for.
Okay.
Like, you know, we like I said, we started out, we had something that we thought was like really opportunistic. We thought we could flip it really quickly.
Sure.
And then, you know, if you go into fundraising, you're basically create you need to tell a story. Uh-huh. Your story needs to be really, really good, and uh-huh. you need to sell a vision and, you know, a long-term plan and a business model yourself, that can take you,
right.
you know, to becoming a $1 billion company. I mean, that was the minimum. Nowadays, it's like $1 billion. That's not enough.
Yeah,
you
right.
know?
Like, not enough for anyone these days. I know what you
it's,
mean.
It's not. And so we didn't feel like we were the right fit for it at the time, and we didn't feel like we knew the story. And the last thing we wanted was, we could have made something up.
Sure.
For sure. Yeah, right. Don't get me wrong.
Right, like, right.
We could have easily.
I was going to say, you guys are publishers at this
point,
right?
Yeah, but we didn't, you know, we didn't, like, you ultimately, when you raise money, you need to see it as like you're bringing in a partner, and you can't be dishonest, and you can't, you know, just make things up to tell, you know, to, in order to raise money.
Right.
Because you're stuck with that person.
Right. And why do you want, and what is he going to bring to the operation?
You bet. And it's a debt. Like, no matter how you spin it, once you take money from people, you owe them. Mm-hmm. Like, it's even more of a mental thing. Forget what you have on the papers. Right. Like, you have a burden now to, you know, to make sure that these people are, you know, these investors that deserve it. They bet on you.
Right.
And they deserve to get multiples. Back. Yeah. Like, that's just the nature of the game. I mean, I think investors have a problem sometimes understanding that, yeah, they could also lose their money.
Right.
And it's not personal, but
That's business.
That's business. So in the beginning, yeah, that was kind of the thing. We just didn't feel like we had that story and that there was something that was going to push us. That changed. So like a couple years into it, we started, you know, going through deeper exercises to understand, you know, the purpose of what we were doing.
Sure.
And that's kind of when we had that stronger narrative. We were like, okay, we're democratizing expertise.
Okay.
You know, specifically now in mobile growth, but we kind of felt like we knew something bigger, which was we knew how to make really strong applications based off of data. Like, give us data and we'll help people digest it, understand it, make sense of it, and tell a good story out of it. And we There's knew that that was bigger than just, you know, mobile growth at the time. And
That's
so
nice.
we you know, at that point where we understood that our market was, you know, exponentially
right.
larger too, we said, okay, it's time to raise money. But what ended up being is we said, you know, the our market, you know, the mobile growth market, was heating up, and we started getting inbound opportunities from companies looking to acquire us.
Okay.
And
so you went for it again?
No, and then this is actually when we said, okay, we either raise money or we sell the company.
Right.
Let's try and do both in parallel and see where we land and figure out if there's an opportunity we like. And that's okay. Kind of when we got the call to sell.
Okay.
I skipped so much in that.
No. That's good. Yeah, no, I understand. We have to get to a point at some point. You know, so it's funny because you guys.
You asked me what I did in the company, and I think I didn't answer
that. Well, there you go. You're the president. That's what you do. Okay. You go and tell the story, right? Yes, so it's okay.
Like
but
that.
Basically, you know, to me, so it's like you guys get into this mobile growth, you know, space basically, and you're helping each app, store owner, whatever it might be, get visibility, exposure on the app store, wherever there is with through publication and everything like that. But at the end of the day, what in a sense made you understand that this was where you had to be? You know, where was that? Because in my thing, great, the democratization of the whole process, amazing. I get, you know, you're telling me as an app store, you know, participant with my application that I can get more visibility, exposure, a better brand story, a better brand development. Amazing. But how did you know this is the space you wanted to focus on? Because right now, a lot of people would even argue back with you and say, App Store, I can't get my thing shown. No one looks. Mm-hmm. It's so hard. It's so saturated. Everyone has a million apps.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, this was 7 or 8 years ago. And I think, you know, basically the space that we initially carved out was called App Store Optimization.
Right.
You look up App Store Optimization and you basically find nothing. This, you know, 8 years ago, you didn't find much.
Okay.
Maybe a few articles about what it is, the basics. The tools out there were really limited, very elementary. Everything was about like, you know, this field called keyword optimization.
Sure.
But then nothing spoke about, you know, like it wasn't really, the language itself wasn't strategic. It wasn't like, how are you leveraging all the different assets that you have in the store?
Okay.
For, you know, to better your marketing. And when you think about it, the single point of failure for an industry of billions of dollars, money was thrown at ads like nonstop, right? At huge scale, people pushing everyone to a single point, which is the App Store, just so people can decide to download or not. And you realize, whoa, people are not converting there.
Wow.
Like 1%, right. 5%, 20%, depending on.
Like I'm getting them in the door?
Yeah.
But they're not buying anything.
Exactly. Imagine it's like, you know, bringing people to like your storefront.
Right.
And you've got the worst, you
right,
know,
it's a mess.
Display.
It's gross. It's,
exactly.
Yeah, right. Nothing's there.
And so, you know, if you optimize that, yeah, you'll get people to come. You'll get people to download and get people to buy. So, you know, we recognize that as just this empty space. It had certain, you know, I think as a niche, we felt like this is a place that was a fit for us and what we had could have accomplished at the time, being bootstrapped,
sure,
you know, coming in and trying to leverage ourselves from that niche into something bigger, which is eventually what happened. So,
right,
you know, we focused on something small. We immediately detected that there was something there.
Right.
And I think this is the kind of fun part about B2B businesses.
Okay.
It's, you know, to me at least, is really exciting. You relatively quickly can get to a point where you understand if there's product market fit.
Okay.
Or, you know, you could at least begin to smell it.
More so than B2C?
Way more, because B2C, you can't go out there and ask users, you know, would you use this or would you like to play with something like this?
Right.
You got to develop something. You got to have an MVP. You got to have something a bit more robust so that
sure,
people can experience. And then you need certain numbers to feel more
right,
confident. You know, like if you get 10 people to say, I want this, it's not enough.
Right. If you get 10,000.
Yeah.
Right,
that, it's
know,
a different story. Right. Right. I mean, it scales quicker.
Right.
But with B2B, you know, or at least enterprise B2B,
sure,
if you've got a market, you know, at the time we had a market of, say, 700 companies that if we could make half of them our customers, then we're massive.
Sure.
So if you start to get 5, 6, 7, or 8 of those saying, I want this and I'm willing to pay for this even before you've developed it.
Right. Right. It's a few percent even of the companies in the market at that point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you have a lot more of a, like a say in that sense to get in. But are you guys really going for B2B? Because at the end of the day, if I'm a guy, I have an app, I'm B2C at that point, right?
I mean, that's true, but, you know, ultimately I kind of look at you as a business.
Sure.
But, you know, it really depends on your product at the end of the day and how much you think you could, you know, how much value you think you're generating or what is the perceived value of the customer for a product like yours.
Okay.
And when you run the math, you know, there wasn't really a better option than to be an enterprise B2B company, meaning going after the companies that are spending, you know, or making over $10 million a year annually. So we've really, and I think that really helped us. The moment you understand your business model, you basically understand your entire go-to-market plan and, you know, the motion of your business. Like, we had to have consultative sales because that's how large companies like to buy. They like this boutique experience of someone consulting them on how to be better.
Make them feel good.
Yeah. Make them feel good, for sure. Yeah. And it works. I mean, you're always, I only sound like a sneaky salesperson, but like... It's the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you go in, you show value, and that's how you build the relationship and trust.
Yeah, yeah. So wait, what's then the change then? Because I want to know, you said when we first started, you said Store Maven is moving to the Mavens.
Right.
Is this a play?
It is.
What's the play?
Well, so we've had this, you know, in the works for a long time. Like, we always felt that, I mean, Store Maven did us really good justice, that name. And I'll tell you why.
It's a great name.
The word Maven, expert.
Right.
Comes from Yiddish.
Does it actually?
Yeah.
Mavin. Wow. I Hebrew. Didn't know that actually.
Yes.
Everyone, new word on the loose.
Here. Yeah. And I know all of you are looking forward to studying some
linguistics.
Yiddish.
Yeah, exactly.
And store, obviously, you know, experts of the store.
That is English. I know that.
That was the thing. Okay. Right?
Right.
But our expertise grew far beyond that. In fact, like, we got to a point where the word Mavens became really deeply ingrained in our culture. And we actually turned that, and I think this is a significant piece for entrepreneurs. It's like, how do you create, you know, a certain kind of myth or story internally that motivates people, connects people, and really makes people feel special? I think that's a key ingredient. People want to go and work someplace that makes them feel special. People want to feel special just
100% of the time.
You know,
right?
Period.
Right.
Right.
100%.
And I think the word Mavens really did that for us. Like, I mean, yeah, this is hindsight. It might have been something different, you know, if it hadn't been Mavens. But when we hire, basically people go through a day called Maven Day.
Okay.
And they experience what it is to be, you know, like a Maven. And we talk about what the meaning of that is and how we define that.
Interesting.
And there's a lot to it. There's like... people at the company really want to become experts in anything that they're doing, regardless. And it's not just mobile growth. It's like, if I'm product manager at Stormin, like, I strive for greatness.
Right.
And that word of Mavens really implemented this idea and got people to bond like crazy over it.
Interesting. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like an internal branding play. Yeah. It's an external play.
So internally, everything. We've been like Mavens for a long, long time. And then externally, we feel like, okay, we're not just about app stores. I mean,
yeah, we're about anything.
About anything. Well, now anything mobile growth, but who knows what we're going to be in the future. I mean,
keeps the options open.
Basically. It keeps the options open. And I think when you think about branding in general, a really good branding exercise will bring you to a name that doesn't limit you.
Got you.
In 5-10 years, too.
Interesting.
And Stormhaven, it limited us for 8. Okay. It lasted for 8 years.
But now, and now you're moving on to like
and now we're Mavens.
Experts of the mobile.
Just experts. Domain. Now, I mean, as we got acquired, we're, you know, interestingly, like, now our clients are actually just internal.
Sure.
So, like, right. We're part of this massive organization, Zynga. They've got dozens of game studios. Sure. And they've become our customers. And so
that's awesome.
We you know, the way I see it, it's like, I'd like them to have, you know, a Slack channel. I need a Maven, and, you know, they get to us and we help solve their problems.
That's awesome. Listen, Adam, this has been a fantastic episode. I really appreciate you sharing with us all this insight. And listen, I wish the best for Mavens in the future. Let there all be Mavens everywhere. Let's hope for that.
Hopeful.